Welcome on. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. Baltimore Positive. We are positively in one of my favorite places. Anytime I get to wear my floral shirt and have Best of Baltimore bestowed upon me by people I genuinely like and respect, it's going to be a good day here. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I will have scratch-offs for Ravens. I don't know if it's going to be good luck, bad luck. I don't want to talk to Luke about that a little later on. We'll figure that all out. We're here at Coco's Pub, another Best of Baltimore winner. I did take the picture right at the door, right in the front door. When you win Best of Baltimore, it's not the biggest award. They have other things. But, like, it's a big award. It's right at the front door. Come see them at Coco's. Also, our friends at GBMC. And Farnan and Dermer put us out doing this crazy thing that we do. Ron, good to see you. Everything good. Orioles, maybe, maybe not. Max, good to see you.
Hello.
I saw you both at the Best of, and this is my photo op. I won. I really won. You love me. You like me. I don't know. You guys threw a nice party, and I wanted to get you out before. You ever get the next magazine out?
Right.
I mean, yeah, Mueller was here. He'd be ripping out the little mailer things in there and got people fill it out. So Best of all, am I late to the party on Best of all, or is it still okay?
No, we just put it online. So okay, it's great, and you can access it online. Probably harder to find in stores because we've moved on to the September issue. But you can read it online and read all about Nestor winning his moment of glory.
I'm on a page 54. I don't even know.
Do you want to hear my theory? Okay.
Hold on. You are the editor-in-chief of Baltimore Magazine.
Yes.
Ron is the...
Senior editor.
Senior editor of Baltimore Magazine. I knew when I won, and I'm going to... I got a text in the afternoons tell you, like, I'm friends with the Baltimore Banner, Chris Corman, and he had won the APSE Award, Associated Press Sports Editor, which, when I was a young man, I was the one that filled out all the applications, did all the cutting and pasting for Ken Rosenthal's story on Eddie Murray or something like that. So, he won. I threw him a, hey, congratulations on your... winning this a big award. I know what this award represents. And he wrote me back, well, congrats on your award. And I'm like, what are you talking about, dude? You know, you're kidding me, right? And he sent me a picture of it. And he had gotten a magazine. I guess it had just come out. So I had a journalist tell me. So, like, it was an impeccable source, you know, at that moment.
Let me just say, Best of all for magazine awards, bigger than maybe the thing, Best of all. What is it? This movie from the Baltimore Banner.
Okay.
Pulitzer Prize finalist. And I said there that she was winning an award at her team for this story on transportation issues. And I said, it's not like winning, being a finalist for a Pulitzer. And she's like, oh my God, I will hear from way more people about the Best of Baltimore award than I ever will hear from.
Well, you're about to hear from me in this segment. I'll tell you that right now.
Got some cachet locally.
Okay, here's my theory. Ready?
Go ahead, give me your theory.
You kind of wish you had not won a Best of because your favorite thing to do is complain about the fact that you have not won a Best of award.
You've read my social.
So the fact that you
I don't know
won,
what I'm going to do today. I don't know how to handle this.
This is like when the Red Sox won the World Series. Like,
I don't
your entire
this.
Identity
isn't being a loser.
Isn't being a loser. And now that you're a winner, you're like, who am I? You're having an existential crisis, I feel.
Well, I brought my bag of stuff here. I'm glad that you brought this up. I'm glad you brought this up. Because I brought my... this is my Best of Baltimore Award from 1997. It was on my wall in the radio station for many, many years. I still have my party ticket here. This was not the party where your buddy from BAL said something very funny to Uncle Allie.
Uncle
Allie beat me up. So I won the award 29 years ago.
Look
and
at
I
that
won.
Baby.
Look at that kid. Look at that good-looking kid. Right here in this neighborhood, too. Right at Memorial Stadium there, Ron, for you, right? That's how I was so proud of that I took the cover of the magazine out, and I won City Paper, which you were at City Paper 96, right?
No, I was already at Baltimore Magazine.
So I have to kiss your ass for giving me this, too?
That's right.
Jeez, I don't want to. I don't want to do any of that.
He
so,
was not there yet. So
no, you weren't there
yet. He has
yet.
Nothing to do.
So, I'm going through
here. He was a
right
messenger.
This is my Did you have anything to do? This is City Paper 2000. We were all
by
that.
Long gone.
They called me best.
I would have done everything in my power to convince them not to give you.
Ron Reed from 1997. What was I in 1997? What was I best off up here? What
best
is that?
Radio talk show host sports. Nastiness Rapid Ratio WLGAM. I will say.
I didn't have station
then. I was working my way through Towson at the time, and I would hear you like a lot of my classes up there.
Pretty good, wasn't I? I was best of Baltimore. I
was
best
the perfect dose. You know what I mean? I yes.
So this is before the station. I didn't have a station, any of that. This was, I had the station and lost the station. And I was on this crappy station. And I won Sports Freak. Sports Freak.
Okay. How do you feel about that? Good?
I don't know. I'm just saying these are the things. You gave me an award. What was my award? It was I was reinvented, correct?
That right. Best
reinvented. Reinvented, right?
Right.
And then?
From a freak to a respectable member of society.
This here was in 2003, City Paper.
Yeah.
I won Best Local Radio TV Sports Freak.
Okay.
Sports Freak.
So that's stuck. The freak.
I don't know, dude, but I'm looking in here.
The language of the time, you know.
Baltimore, best of Baltimore. My wife will be very disappointed to hear this, but she knows this. December 2001, I was one of Baltimore's hot singles.
You were? Well,
see?
I probably was involved in that.
See?
Oh,
you forgot how hot I was now that I've been married for 23 years. But I was, let's see, I'm between Chris McAllister was one of them.
Chris McAllister.
Yeah, Debbie. Let's see here. Me. What did I look like then? Graham from WHFS. Bonnie Downing. I love you, Bonnie. How are you? Heard from her this week. Who else do I know? Amy Hammond. I did not know her. Joel Kate. Knew him a little bit. Andrew. I swear I'm in here somewhere. Hold on. Did I pass the page? Maybe I wasn't really a hot single that year. But there I am right there. I'm with Chris McAllister. So there I am. I was a hot single. Right, Nasty Radio, Sun, Fast Times, The Fonz, YouTube, Jimmy Buffett, Celebrity Dream Date, Kerry Russell. You appreciate that.
Sure, great
right?
taste.
So I'm just going through my BMAG accomplishments, but nothing made me prouder and nothing I heard more about. And it might have been before you got there. This is 96. When did you get there, 96?
Probably about
90.
Why was
he browsing and not
doing
the world?
Because I've been on here 35 years,
and
I've
won every year.
It's been 29 years since I've won. 29 years.
All right.
Well, all right. Now.
Don't be a freak about it.
No, no. You know,
see what
on.
I did there? Don't be a freak. Okay.
I'm trying to figure out why you picked me. So anyway, I was in this magazine here, right next to Miss Marilyn. Have you ever seen this spread?
I love that.
This was my Baltimore magazine coming of age.
You look like Mike Mussina in that picture.
Okay.
Right?
Anybody
I took
this picture above Burps in the studio, and the guy actually cut out the N-A-S-T-Y. He cut it out and put it on a mirror. Reverse backwards, and I had to look at the mirror like this to not. And now AI would just do this in like 10 seconds.
That looks really good, and I never realized that you look like Mike Mussina, but you definitely do in that picture.
And this one thing went through how I was never going to win Best of Baltimore, and then I won five.
And who wrote that? Did I write that? No, I mean, I do not remember.
Jim Duffy wrote
it. Jim Duffy, the man.
The man. The myth. The legend.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
What? When you do Best of Baltimore, I don't know what got you. That's all I got. 35 years, I showed five items.
Okay.
And I reinvented myself.
All right, well now
I guess that's my point, is that like at some point, you all put these things together and decide like categories, things. It's always been creative in regard to categories and things that you do. Give me the genesis of your, because you're recreating this every year. I don't. I'm very happy I won. I kid and whatever, but I am shocked that like when I heard, I'm like, that's really nice to be acknowledged. So I am appreciative of that. But you guys go out of your way to try to not just acknowledge people like me, you know, but like give good advice to people in Baltimore and say these are the things that are really cool about Baltimore. And that's what BMAG's about.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that we have been on this show and we know you is almost to your detriment.
I know.
Because we will go out of our way that came out wrong. But you know what I mean. We will go out of our way to not acknowledge our friends, our family, stuff like that, because we don't want to make it seem like a little shady. But the truth is, what you were doing here was too good to ignore. Right, Ron Cassie?
Did you guys work this out together?
No. I have to say about that best of Max knows the whole issue and the history of it. She can talk about all the different categories and how it's all in frame. But as far as the news and media, I mean, I keep a running list kind of throughout the years of stories, of podcasts, of films I've seen, of everything that just looks, you know, like really high quality, the highest quality type of work, and then kind of try to sort it out at the end and still go through all the awards, the Emmys and the AP awards and Maryland, Delaware, DC Press, to try to really do a whole, but it's all year long.
It's a shrinking medium.
It's not with film and documentaries and podcasts.
Okay,
podcasts essentially. But
it used to be about Jerry Turner and Al Sayers. You know,
it used to be easier.
Yeah,
broadcast TV and print journalism. But so it's a whole running thing. And I think I didn't realize, honestly, during the year, there was a couple stories. I think one was the Frank Robinson story where I listened to your interview with Dan Rodericks. I know you just did one with Chris Van Hollis. There was a couple times throughout the year I'm listening to, because I'm doing a story related to somebody you've talked to or covered. So in part of my research, I'm uncovering some folks you've talked to. And when I have been a guest on the show, you've introduced me to a wide range of interesting folks, you know. The SIG.
He'll be here in a little while.
Yeah, I mean, some other folks who actually led the stories like him.
Well, actually, live here. I go neighborhood to neighborhood and I collect people. And sometimes I fend the poor people behind us at the table. And sometimes I make new friends at the bar. But, like, I love the city, man. And, like, I love the fact that you have roots at City Paper and here and there. And I have the Sun roots and the BAL thing. And I was out with her last year, and she's like, oh, Alan and I go to movies. And we know, like, no. And then we watch the movie together. And so when I won the award, I thought the same thing as you. I'm like, oh, man, they're going to say this is fixed. And it probably kind of is, which makes it even, I guess, funnier to me to some degree. But I am flattered beyond belief that you think that highly of me.
You were sports talk, you were loud, often obnoxious, but informed
still
and funny, all those things still. But your role is more like the glue guy now. You bring people together, don't know each other.
You made me cry. Don't do it. Don't do that.
You know, like
don't do that.
You know, you introduced me to, you had people on Chris Beal, right?
Oh, Brooks, sure. Yeah.
The director.
Well, you know, Chris is Mr. Baltimore. He does the tourism thing.
And Chris, the director of the play, was there as well. And then, you know, Ann Manick showed up, who I know, and which happened. So it was like,
he blew my mind with his art knowledge, by the way. Do you know what she knows about art?
I did not.
Go to BMA with him and just hang out with, like, Ann Manick. John Shields shows up. I got to get back over to Gertrude's and do the show over there. And I got to get her on, you on. I had an art class in high school with Joyce Gucci. You can look this up on Baltimore Positive. She had a band called Beyond Words that you know as Love Riot.
Oh,
right.
They're back together, apparently.
Right. Yep. Lisa, who's been here doing the show,
yeah.
Michael Gell,
yeah.
Who were Milkshake if you had kids of that age, right? All that. I've known them since I was the music critic at the News American in 1985, because Joyce was my art teacher in 10th grade. She also created the logo for Child's Play, John Allen's band in Essex. She taught us both at Dundalk High School, and her husband, George, was the bass player in Gina Shock's original punk rock band in Dundalk. So we're talking like, so if Joyce comes out, Joyce knows Anne extremely well, and those art issues. So, like, I want to do like an art fart show where I bring people that know way more about art, including you, because you sort of brought it to life to me. Like, how can you know this much about the guy and the punchalism? And, you know, I mean, I remember what I was taught in 1984, but like, you're a bon vivant. That's what I say about you. I would give you some sort of weird award if I gave you the
Renaissance Man.
Renaissance Man is what I said. Did I say that? I mean that. That's probably what I was talking about.
The other thing I'll say, this is after this came out, this issue. I used your podcast with John Allen for the East Point Mall closing, which was great, right?
Which happens this week. You're going to make me cry, man. I've been emotional lately about a lot of things. I won Best of Baltimore for reinvention, right? So that was it. And you guys did a lot of different categories about how do you how do you put this together, Max? I mean, honestly, I feel a month late on the BMAG thing and having my fun with you breaking out all this stuff that I had in the bag that means a lot to me. But I'm hanging this up. I'm going to brag about this for a year, and anybody that wins,
well,
brags. But, like, as much as we joke about the fix being in and me giving you a hard time, you really have killed my shit. I mean, I can't bust your chops anymore about this. But it is a thing. It's a go-to for me to say when you say Les Maisons by Café Dieu Lerone.
Oh, man, that place.
I stood in line down there on the square, and I've gotten a little – like, so I like hearing of new places, old places, and that's one of the things I love promoting.
So, you know, what I always say is, like, this issue does not sneak up on us. We do it every single year. So we're saving string all year. You know, we have files, we're keeping notes, we're making mental notes like this could win. And then people who sort of cover a particular beat, generally speaking, are the ones who edit the individual sections. And then, you know, we're just basically saying this is the cool stuff that was in Baltimore this year. Like, we love Baltimore. We love celebrating Baltimore. That's one of our missions, basically. And we want to make sure everybody else knows about the cool stuff. It's like the opposite of gatekeeping, which is what I put in my little intro. Like, we don't gatekeep this stuff. We shout it from the rooftops. We want you to know about Sandy Point Donuts, which was featured in the TV show Pluribus, by the way. Which, oh, you don't do pop culture, but Pluribus.
I only do it here.
Yeah, so Pluribus, one of the great shows.
This is?
Vince Gilligan.
Yeah, yeah.
Vince Gilligan.
The actress is really great.
Right. Ray Seahorn. So anyway.
He's part of a Renaissance man. He's got to be my barometer. What
he just, he just.
If he hasn't heard of it, how cool could it be?
Pluribus. Everybody listening has heard of Pluribus.
And he told me about Pete Alonso before anybody.
Really?
What? Mr. Matt.
Mr. Matt. Yeah, well, we were talking about Pete Alonso. It could just be a big love fest. So that's what this issue is.
You got all the good stuff in here.
It's
all the good stuff.
We've been saving string all year on it, and we're just happy to share it. And then, you know, the party that you went to is such a wonderful celebration of Baltimore. I mean, it fits right into your wheelhouse, what you do.
I had a really good time.
You did? Okay.
It's hot, though, man.
It was hot.
It's always August.
It's hot.
It's always hot.
I know. And that new Raven space is, like, indoor-outdoor.
Talon?
Yeah, the Talon, yeah. And everybody was just hovering indoor because that's where the air conditioner was. We were all like packed into the AC.
I was like this.
The VIP area was empty. Everybody was in the AC, but it was a really fun party.
I'm on VIP too, and
yeah,
I sweat like everybody else.
Right, even VIPs sweat.
We had a great time, and it was like great people.
Great food.
I went to that party all the years I didn't.
Right.
How many of those am I going to get every you guys, you know? Well, this is the interesting thing for the reinvention thing. Lick it. Take it back.
Correction.
Yeah, correction.
In the August issue, we mistakenly...
We erred.
Baltimore Magazine regrets
this. Apologize for the error. Yeah.
I'm trying to keep a straight face, and I'm trying to, like, lure you in on this reinvention thing, because I think it's a fascinating thing that you think I collect the best people, kind of, sort of. Best people collector is kind of, like, what I'm taking out of it. And I think, from my heart of hearts, and I don't want to get too Sally Field here, but say, you sort of see me in that way. And I do this in the same way where I did my 27 favorite places to eat. By the way, today, in my belly, last day for my number one item, and the reason it's number one, heck of it's number two, the coconut shrimp up here was top 10 as well. It's peach cake. You take it away. You only get 60 days of it. Tomorrow it's gone. So I made it number one. So I am the same way where John Harbaugh would say, comparisons to death of joy or whatever. I'm comparing stuff, crab cakes, crab soups, this, that, neighborhoods, experiences, all of that. But my favorite thing in life is people. And this show's turned into, if you're on my show, you like me enough to want to come over and have something to promote or something to say or some joy to bring me or I have it to bring to you. And once I master AI, what I'm going to do is create an AI comedic avatar where I get to be funny and get to be the jerk I always wanted to be without having to be. Because making people smile and...
Was that your transition into the AI conversation?
Making people smile and bringing people together... It's sort of what your magazine does, man. It's what Pinto's does at the bar. It's the glue that makes us human after having masks on to say, what am I going to do for shtick now that Nasty Nestor's over and all that? It's I'm going to do this crab cake tour, and I know Marcella, and I have Costas, and I'm going to put... And one day the governor's going to come, and he might be black, he might be white, he might be Republican, he might be Democrat, and they all do, right? And I've loved this part of my life because of the people I've got to bring together, because it's the greatest six of people every time I do a show. I mean, Dave Shinen's coming in next, Rasid's coming next, so like, I got great people coming by, but this is what this is. It's saying there are great people in this city doing amazing things. Go support them. Go check them out.
It's a very democratic show as well, because you will bring in, you know, your buddy that you know from the neighborhood, and then you'll bring in Chris Van Hollen, and you don't make any distinction between the two of them. And that is a very Baltimore sort of approach. You know, there's just a sort of democratic approach to conversation and who your guests are. You're never going to be like, oh no, you're not famous enough or big enough to be my guest.
Well, people
like, if you like
people
that
don't
person,
come on.
Right.
People don't come on, don't give me a chance to like them. Right? I mean, you know what I mean? Like,
all right, so who has said no that you want to have on the show?
Oh man, you know, like, there's too many people.
Okay.
Because it'll sound like a hate list. You know, everybody but the Orioles, everybody at the Ravens, start there. So let's go down. I'm talking Republican, Democrat. I'm talking about people that don't want to talk to me about whatever their key issue would be, politically or not, socially or not. I think that's a shame, because I think we got to get together and talk. And you know, can we talk about it, all that? And AM radio became such a sort of a wasteland for bad things in a lot of ways. And I just felt like, when my wife got sick, this whole thing started. My wife got sick, and I had bad things going on 12 years ago this week. And I said, you know, I need to just, like, put something on the air that I want to be a part of. Something that's worth my time to create. And I think that that's what I've done. And you guys have been a huge, I mean, you and I, like, I found pictures of you and me and Alan together. And you and me and John Hody. Like, you guys have been a part of the show and making it fun for
Alan
me. Alan Crowley. So I do feel like.
Oh, Alan McCallum. I love Alan McCallum. But did you know Alan Prell also? Because that was my mentor, my radio
you
mentor.
You know, he said the funniest, nastiest thing to me. That was, he said it to me at the Best of Baltimore party. It was in the parking lot at the Bo Hager's Bo Dome. Like, you know what I mean? It was outdoor. You remember that?
Yeah.
So I think I won. I mean, it might have been this year. I think I had won, because I had like a, you gave us like a fun badge to wear or whatever. I didn't even know what happened. Do you know who Alan Prell is or was?
Yeah, you
were here at that point.
Yeah, yeah.
When did you come to Baltimore? You've been 90s, right?
No, I came in like 86, 87, but I was at the bar then.
Okay, so Alan Prowl was very famous, curmudgeonly, kind of fun.
Yeah.
A server? Would you call it a server?
I don't know. To me, Alan Prowl had a vaudevillian quality about him.
Yes.
He was a sort of old fashioned style, funny guy.
He said the funniest thing to me ever. He only said one thing to me in his life. And it was so funny and mean. I was 28 or 29. I'm nasty Nestor. I did not have hair down here. I had kind of blonde in my hair or whatever.
Right.
And I'm at the party, and he came up to me, and he had his badge, said, you know, Alan. And I'm like, and I think I was like, hey, you're Uncle Alan. Uncle Alan, I'm Nestor Appaloosa. He says, oh, I've heard you're a real a-hole. And he walked away from me.
That sounds like Uncle Alley.
You said that the last time I watched this.
He was probably joking. Like, he had
hilarious.
That kind of a perfect sense of humor, you know. And if you couldn't hang with that kind of joke, if you were going to be delicate and offended by that,
he's from Jersey, I'm from
Buffalo. So you absolutely could have hung with Uncle Alley. And that is so funny.
I'm going to use that now.
it's an
icebreaker.
It was definitely a broke my ice, for sure. Max Weiss is here. Ron Cassie is here. They have bestowed upon me best of designation. Do I get like a plaque or something, or I just get the VIP tickets? What do I get? They get a 2 tickets to a show, anything like that?
Should have gotten a plaque. Oh, you know what? Did you ever get his email to the powers that be? Okay, well, you should have
a ticket.
You absolutely.
So listen, 29 years later, when I win the next.
Yeah, no. We'll get you.
Why am I only human by myself?
This is the real reason he has his arm, because he hasn't gotten his plaque and he wants it. And by the way, that is going to be taken care of when I get back to, you know, my desk.
I want to talk more about you picked me in this sort of weird category. What are some other things that you picked that might not be as mainstream as, let's say, you honor Jerry Sandusky right next to me? Yeah, people.
Marty Bass.
Marty, obviously, right?
Tom Hall. A bunch of people were stepping down this year, you know, that I mean, a little bit what you do is like what Tom Hall, and I think his beloved, and I think Mark Stein was there for a long time. It's kind of a community around that these shows. You know, it's kind of a time where people tune in and have something to talk about together. If you run into somebody, you did the show, I went to YPR, you can miss it at the website. I think that's kind of lost. I mean, I don't know who the next host of Midday is going to be, or but I think it is a loss not to have that kind of, you know, thing that we're all kind of listening to and talking about. And it is one of those things that forms a fabric of glue for a city, you know.
Freaked me out when the Bay shut down 2 weeks ago. I picked my wife up from the airport last night. She's been out of town 2 weeks with her family. Since she's been gone, the Bay went away. And, like, on our preset, she pushed number 2. 98 Rock's number 1. I'm number 6. I'm only number 2 with my cat. but she pushed number 2, and I've already reset it to the rock station up in Hanover, Pennsylvania, that I lose, like, sort of, like, anywhere south of, like, the Beltway. I mean, you make a right turn on Harford Road, it's gone.
Is this the Kent High School radio station?
No, what's this?
825.
You gotta get this?
Yeah, you can get it from eastern Baltimore County. Definitely once you get over the Bay Bridge.
Man, I own a radio station, so like
high school kids, it's the strongest high school station in the state, and one of the strongest in the country.
Signal ones?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's.
I believe in radio.
They have classes and everything, and then they have. They have shows at night and the weekends, and they do a lot of classic rock because that music's available for sale. And it's not, right? They can't necessarily put on Taylor Swift, right?
Right.
It costs a lot of money.
Right.
They can get a lot of the classic kind of stuff. So you get a lot of that. And I drive to my brother's in South Jersey when I have to go, over the water. I'll pick it. It'll get me from like TMD to like XPN.
See, I appreciate you not talking Sirius XM or any of that, right? Because people. John Allen, my dear friend, he's got a Tesla. There's no AM in the car. Mm. They've taken it away. So thank God for podcasts. Thank God for you guys. I mean, you still print this. Now, your policy, when I was bragging about all this, people were like, oh, I don't want to see it. And I took a picture of it, and I put it up, and I goofed around in my chiropractor's office, Dr. Steve, where I saw it for the first time and got to hold it up the next day.
How about this beautiful cover?
My wife went to the store to buy it and couldn't get it right away.
Yeah.
And then we got it, but it's... You put this online the month after, right?
Yeah.
All right, the cover. I want to talk about it.
Designed by our wonderful creative director, Amanda White Isley.
That is Ed Koster.
Isn't it beautiful? Yes. That
on top of the snowball?
The snowball.
I'm just a snowball fan.
You are.
I'm not a...
You don't like the marshmallow?
I'm anti-marshmallow.
You're anti-marshmallow?
I'm not anti, I just don't get it.
I'm sitting between two men who are anti-marshmallow?
I'm a snow-cap guy. I like that condensed milk on top mine.
Okay.
That's why.
I mean, the marshmallow is like the reason you get the snowballs, in my opinion.
I like that.
Sorry.
But being from around here, even though, you know, you guys were not born, you're not like the Baltimore. But I don't like the Marty Basses and the people here, and you all, once you were 40 years, you're kind of here. I mean, I'll even say that about Garcia. But for all of you who came here and made a life here, to continue with books about this, and you spent your life's energy just exploring Baltimore moment after moment with this magazine every month in mind to say, that was really good. They deserve attention. They deserve to be lauded in some way. You're one of the few places, other than like... Lister polls or whatever, but like your thing carries weight. I don't know of any other. I mean, it's on the front door here. I got a bag full of stuff that it's meant so much to me. 29 years later, I'm still carrying it around in the bag.
Do you always carry it around, or was that just for today?
Been in my trunk since '97. Where the hell have you been?
No, but I mean, our motto is a great city deserves a great city magazine. And we really do believe that. And, you know, you're right. Because it is printed. Because this magazine was created in 1907. You know, because you can hold it in your hands. It's an institution. I literally think of the magazine as an institution in the same way the BSO is, the BMA is, the Baltimore Orioles. To me, it's like we are the guardians of this institution while we're here. And we hopefully will take good care of it. And then we'll hopefully hand it off to the next generation of editors and writers. Like, that is our fondest goal, you know? So, you know, we think magazines in this age of AI everything and digital everything, and you don't know what's real, this is real, you know? And it's also, like, beautiful to look at and read. So, you know, we always encourage people to support it by subscribing, because you should be proud of this magazine. And then, you know, we want people to advertise in the magazine as well, because that's what keeps the lights on.
Ron, you want to add? Because I'm going to change the subject, but keep going. You've been quiet there, man.
He says amen.
You bite down here. You're overwhelmed when she's on the show, aren't you?
No, I'm just giving. This is really Max's baby. I do a part of it, you know, and I did a feature story on Erica Bridgeford, the founder of the Baltimore Peace Movement.
Okay.
Also, in this issue.
Well, I will say on the air, because I'll probably put this on social media later, the New York Times has been visiting with a story this week, the Wall Street Journal, CBS Evening News about Baltimore reduction and homicide, right? Praising the mayor, praising Ivan Beatty.
Let's talk about it on the streets here. Yeah,
deservedly, city state attorney, praising safe streets. But Erica and the Baltimore Peace Movement have been seeding change in the city for a decade now. They're really cultural, boots on the ground, grassroots change. And so we did a feature on it. So essentially, it's paying homage to one of the most special people you will ever meet in your life. To me,
I should get her on the show, right?
You should.
Yeah.
You should. She is, and I don't use this lightly, because I've never really interviewed them. Elijah Cummings and Barbara McCall's level of intelligence combined with empathy and compassion and vision. That's who Erica really is. And just extraordinary.
See, here's what I'm giving a Best of Baltimore award to you. Is you say to me that I bring people, good people together, and then you're telling me who your good people are. That's it right there. That's where you find somebody in my world to go to a movie. I find a great guest on the show. We create a message. We find somebody that wants to support their organization, the good stuff that they're doing. Because I feel like the city's getting better. I would sit in front of anybody and I would say, you can defecate upon it inside, outside. I'm not. People do it in front of me every day. I was down on Eastern Shore 2 weeks ago. I walked up to the guy who's doing the Chesapeake, wants to secede from Maryland. You see this guy? He's got one of his bunkies with him, and I went up to him. It reminded me of a character like Sergeant J.W. Pepper in the James Bond movies, as an example. And I went up to him, I'm like, hey, my name's Nestor Aparicio. I'm from Baltimore. I'm sorry to hear that. And I'm like,
how dare you?
Hi, nice to see you too. What's the next thing? What do I say to someone when that's what he said to me. I'm sitting in a pool at a tourism event at Mako, 30 feet from the ocean. And I'm thinking, I like the Eastern Shore too, dude, but you don't have to, you know, defecate upon Baltimore, and certainly is not going to make a fan of me, of you. Have you been there lately? Or, you know, do you spread shit about Baltimore everywhere? You know, this is where
curse.
I am, right?
Oh,
no, I'm just saying, like, yeah. For me, I don't...
We confront that. We see it a lot, obviously.
And you know, for any of us, you do Best of Baltimore, which is nothing good about Baltimore. Like, I shut that down immediately, and I think for people that are trying to shed a light on that, it's good people. I've had Ivan Bates on the show, you know what I mean? Like it's people talking about the issues and with solutions instead of criticism. Especially unfounded criticism, right?
Yeah, and I you said I biked here, and I think my general mode of transportation, because you get to this, it's a second stop to bike and chat, or see something and explore, right? It's a second, you're going away all the time, you get to all these different neighborhoods without this big 2,000-pound piece of metal glass around Upper Fells.
How long did it take you to bike here? We're co-curs, by the way.
30 minutes.
Okay, all
right. Nice ride. Past Clifton Park and Harrington Park, there's improvements going on. Both these unbelievable jewels of the city.
And you see it, boots on the ground.
You see it because I'm riding my bike by
it,
so that's great. I don't get... I love Southern Maryland, Eastern Shore, Western Maryland. Western Maryland, especially living in Pennsylvania, where I grew up. And people occasionally say stuff, I mean, whatever. I mean, I grew up, you know, in Allentown, Pennsylvania, like, much like Dundalk, which would have been 1981 when I graduated from school, right? And to come to Baltimore and live here and to be surrounded by all the diversity and culture and opportunity and art and people from all different walks of life, right, has been extraordinary for me. It's been an extraordinary experience for me. It still is all these years later. That if I had stayed in Allentown, I wouldn't have, you know. The authors, the painters, like, anyway, the school teachers, the social workers, all the food, the diversity of all of it, would not have had, you know. So I think people would want to say,
you've lived a richer life because you came to Baltimore.
Well, of course. I mean, where else would I have met, you know, Amy Schell or Devin Allen or Dee Watkins or a radio show host? Or, and listen, I ran by a great street muralist the other day on my bike. He was just on a weekend, not being paid for anything, just working on the bridge. Locked up my bike and we chatted. Like, you know, these are just not experiences. You know, where I live in Upper Fells is a very diverse community. And, you know, I used to live in Highlandtown. You know, all the ethnic Salvadorian, almost actually, Allentown is really Latino now. So,
so is Dundalk.
But yeah, so very, right. And Native Americans have a community in Dundalk, right? So where
I was the only one there 50 years ago.
No, but it's affordable and you got a house near the water. I mean, but yeah, where else would you have that kind of experience?
The only people who don't like Baltimore are people who don't know Baltimore, right? Like, they just hear about it, they read about it, they're afraid of it for some reason. Come spend a weekend in Baltimore and then tell me you don't love it. Because what I see more often is people coming to the city, like an actor maybe playing at Center Stage, falling in love with the city. And we sort of like it that way. Like, we kind of want to be the best kept secret in America. You know, there's that sweet spot where, like, you know, we want to bring in tourism, but we also don't want to, like, we don't want people to know how great we are.
I wish we could blink and fix the harbor. I mean, just
that's
I mean, I lived down there 19 years, so, like, my heart is there in all of
you've
that.
You've got to go to Harbor Point and Point Park, which I hope we can write about. It connects Fells Point to Harbor East.
Of course, yes, I've been through there. Yes.
Right? It's a beautiful new green space. It's the most natural landscape interactive. You can walk literally from Canton all the way around to the Baltimore Museum of Industry, all the way around to Domino's, along the water, where you're like feet from the water.
That's so unusual.
Wherever people comment, I mean, I can walk and ride my bike to Florida's feet. How do you beat that? How are you richer than that, you know?
Well, playoff team, maybe. Last thing for you guys, and this is my this is my compliment to you, because you talked about diversity.
No, he's like, he's right, though. Like,
yeah, you talk diversity and, like, all that stuff. What's your party? And I'll be honest with you, I've been going for years and years and years. Like, before I won awards, I mean, when I was the hot single, when I was the not single, like, all of that, right? It's always hot, even if you're not the hot single.
Yeah,
it's
mentioned
hot.
That already.
It's
supposed to dance and sweat at a good party.
I did sweat and dance, and I libated. I celebrated. I did all the.
Remember when you were young, you leave a nightclub and you just, like, drenched.
I ate it all. I did it all. So I would just say, I lost my train of thought. See, you guys crushed me. The diversity at that party, and when I walked around, from age groups, people, I did not know a lot of people, to be honest with you. Like, I didn't know half the room. It felt like current new Baltimore. It felt like a really more, I don't say modern take than a magazine would have, in the same way that I would win an award from you guys not being an AM sports radio guy. But, like, for you guys, I think there's been a renaissance for your community, that I went to that party that night, and it wasn't the same people that were at the party 30 years ago that aged out, Florida'd out, I don't go to the city'd out, or they, whatever it would be. It feels like you backfilled people who care about your brand in a lot of ways, and the importance of winning a Best of Baltimore. I mean,
yeah.
I would have been at the party either way, because I love the party. You know, I come on.
I always love places that look like Baltimore, and Baltimore is this incredibly diverse place.
It felt that way, man.
And
it really
we felt
did.
That way about the party, that, like, look around, and that's just what I like. That's why I like to go to Artscape, you know? I like to go to places that look like Baltimore, where it's black and white and young and old and Latin, and the richness, the fullness of what Baltimore
Our
is.
Our favorite night was the tree lighting down at Mount Vernon.
Yeah.
Every year we went out. That was the night where it was like, oh my God, family. Now, you know, we saw that at the park a little bit. I mean, we lived in the city, center of the city, so for 20 years. Shining's here. He lives off Patterson Park. You guys are neighbors,
go.
You know?
There you go.
So, like, I mean, I have Megan on all the time. I love City Life. She owe me a damn shirt. Keep telling her. I want one of the I Love City Life shirts. She can give me a City shirt. But, you know, there is a point where, like, that party with me, my wife and I both got in the car, because we hadn't lived downtown in 4 or 5 years. And we were like, well, so what was your observation? She says, my observation was like, we didn't know everybody and everybody didn't know everybody else. And it was like a real melting pot of like, it was a different kind of room than what I was used to in Baltimore. How about that?
I saw BTS, the Korean K-pop fan, at M&T Stadium, the bank. And the RM, who was like the leader, the spokesperson of the group, he looked around the crowd. It was packed, literally a full house. And he said, this is the most diverse crowd we've played in front of. You know, old, young, black, white, everything. And, you know, Korean boy bands are noticing that. So this is a good sign. That, by the way, was the most fun. That stadium was shaking.
Do you know their music? Are you a fan? Are you singing along? Or like? You know?
I absolutely. Oh. I told my friend I might cry. I did not cry. I held it together. But I was.
She told me last year she was a K-pop fan.
I was screaming, and I had a sore throat the next day. And the collective energy and excitement and positivity, I mean, it was. I brought a friend who was not a K-pop fan, and she became a BTS convert. But RM specifically noticed that this is a really diverse crowd. It was like, hell yeah, it's Baltimore.
I'll add this about diversity is institutions of Baltimore, us included, certainly, first and foremost. You have to push outside our silos on a daily basis. Has to be a daily practice to push outside.
Well, everything in this thing is designed to keep you in the same room. Yeah.
Everything designed to keep you in the same 25 groups of people, friends on Facebook, the same algorithms. And, you know, depending on where you, the neighborhood you grew up in, what high school went to, college or workplace, you're always continually being segregated by all the things pushed outside that geography, ethnicity, sexual orientation, gender. It's just a constant, you know, every story, like I do the conference or here in the magazine, I'm always thinking, like, well, have I been in this neighborhood? Is this new? Is this somebody? You know what I mean? Always practice. And I think every institution, and some do it better than others in Baltimore, but I think Baltimore has largely, most of the leaders I know, especially civic leaders, you know, and nonprofits do that today, but it's like turning around, like a massive shift going the wrong direction, you know.
Well, we're sitting in the middle of one of my favorite places in Baltimore, Coco's Pub. I don't need to tell you, we love Baltimore. Best of Baltimore Magazine. There's awards. She said to me when it came in, and this is your humble brag for Coco, she's like, we can't put them all up on the wall. Like, you know what I mean? So they pull them down. So I pulled the last time I won from 29 years ago down off the wall, and I brought it with me here. So here's, do I at least get like a blue ribbon? Like, I want one of these.
I'm taking care of
these. Anyone document their own life better, like your career, your public life, than you have? You have photographs you pull out on social media from concerts you've been to.
It's funny you bring that up because that's where I'm going.
I'm like,
oh, say that again. What did you say? It's cool
to see
him.
I don't have any of myself, but it's great to see. Like, you saw Van Halen some year or something, some show. I'm like, oh my God.
This. The cellist in you will appreciate this.
You're a tremendous archivist. That's what we should. That's we do that to you when you retire.
Best archivist.
Self archivist.
A word for that.
If you don't document your own life, why are you living it?
No, it's
I mean,
like
your
diary. It's
like what are you doing?
It's like a diary journal. I get that part.
So I had a friend about 3 weeks ago say to me that they'd seen the best concert ever. It was Death Cab for Cutie, one of Alan McCallum's bands as well, and said to me what was the best concert I had ever seen. And that was a long, pregnant pause to say, I've seen thousands of concerts. And the person said, thousands? And I said, thousands? And I've gone to great lengths over the last 3 weeks with my AI to go into a huge rabbit hole because it's my 28th anniversary, the bow tie says so. But in December, it's 35 years I've been on the air every day for 35 years.
So
I'm going to be the 35.
Well, I'm doing. Right, stop stalling.
I'm doing my 28.
Stop filibustering here.
My 28 favorite music memory stories over the next 14 weeks, and then when the 35th anniversary happens, because there's no baseball next year, right?
You're
baseball guy, baseball guy.
You're gonna drag us out for 4 months of shows to get to number one. It's like
No. I'm gonna do next year. I'm gonna do my, in homage to you. I'm gonna do my list of 35 favorite different things.
I remember
my favorite 35 concert ticket stuff, memories, international, national, bar, boy band, artist, dead artist, live. Then there's the interviews, my 35 David Bowie's and Robert Plant's and like that Billy Joel's. And so I'm doing different stuff, but it's all music because A, I'm alive. It's our 35th. I'm not as into sports as I used to be. And Shine and I will talk about that next. I mean, I've done an hour with you. I haven't talked sports at all, and that's you and I could do baseball. So she and I can do baseball. But I've moved. Music is something. He is an unbelievable musician. He's got an incredible album. He has serenaded people. He's an opera singer. He's blushing, but it's true. It's really true. He doesn't like Hootie and the Blowfish, but he would go out of his way to sing REM with me, which would put two REMs. You got REMs here. You guys were more HFS nerds. I was a little bit more. Dun, 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 dun. Yeah, a little more 98 rock. I mean, I grew up with. By the way, we lost Alan Cordiff as well this week.
Very rock.
So you are an incredible cellist. You are a music lover. You are a musician. The music thing to me, it shouldn't piss anybody off. I'm going to be able to tell stories, all the stories that you don't know about how I got that picture with Steven Tyler when I was 15 backstage at the Civic Center. I'm going to tell stories. So that's I'm a raconteur. Is that right?
Nice, excellent, good job.
Do you like that?
I loved it.
Is that from
Zelig?
Yeah, right. You are Baltimore Zelig.
Yeah.
So these music stories, they're going to come out and they're going to be cool. But the number one thing is trying to figure out exactly how many concerts I've been to. And this person said to me, "What's the over under?" And I'm like, 3,000. I think it might be 2,800. It might be 3,500. It's more than 2,000 for sure, but not as much as 4,000.
There's concerts as a teenager I wouldn't have remembered the next day. So
I have the tickets.
Okay. Self-archivist right here.
That's right.
That's right. In fact, he has them in his trunk right
now. All right,
now.
I'm going to show you guys something, and Shine will appreciate this, because when did you start at the Post? What year is it?
Intern in 90. Back in 99.
So this happened in 90, right, 90, 91, 92. I worked at the Sun from 86 to 92, and this got me through college. It's the reason I'm a graduate. You can tell Kurt Schmoke this if you did. I'm missing a finger. I wasn't very good at typing. Backspacing, white stuff that we used on typewriters. At that point, no one had laptops. There was no internet. There was no one had a computer. No one had a home. I mean, that was more 95, 6, 7 in that range where CompuServe, AOL, you've got mail happen, right? I worked at the paper, and it was such an incredible benefit to me that I had, like, files, computer files, where I could type memories, type things, save them, type and save things without printing. We had to print everything then. You guys were old. You know all of this.
Dot matrix.
Thank you. Here we go. All right. Now you just said the word. Let me get to my peach cake here. I got to find it. But this is honest to God. This literally exists. This is the dot matrix from the evening, from the Sun, the day I left. 1986 is when I opened the file. In May of 90 is when I closed the file. But I printed in 1992, the day I left the Sun. It is literally every concert I had gone to. Beginning with Styx and the Ravens and ZZ Top in 1980, I listed every concert in dot matrix printed out. And you want the AI, and we'll do the AI next. Picture of this, I put it into my AI, and it created a spreadsheet of all 289 concerts as of 1987. I'm pretty Mary Lou Henner, so I don't know why. Like, when you say document my life, yes.
I as Max knows, I have a hard time keeping track of what I need to do this week. But I will say there are times where I go on the internet to look up concert books, like who played the Allentown Fairgrounds, what year,
what
their set list was, you
right?
can find.
Sure.
And with my buddies, and I have a reunion coming up, like, and we'll. Oh, that was this show. This is who.
But you don't have any of your ticket stubs. You don't have anything. You didn't keep a box. Nothing. I'm stunned that other people have. And like, Leonard Rasmus, like, you're weird, man. You have every Capitol Center ticket stub. And I'm like, yeah, I thought everybody did that.
I saved them.
They don't.
I saved them, and then like a year later, I'm like, why do I still have this?
Do you have any press pass? Did you throw your? You have every press pass you've ever had, right?
Not every.
You have all your World Series press.
I have my grandfather's clarinet, you know, and I have a few things from my parents. That's it.
He leads a Spartan existence.
Austere.
Austere.
Yeah. Who lives his life on a bike? biking, vacations and bikes around
no
Spain.
No cable TV, no gym membership.
Ron Cassie, my favorite bon vivant, and it means the world to me that you guys, you picked me as best of Baltimore. Max Weiss, editor-in-chief and senior editor of B-Mag. Go get it. By the way, new magazine. Promote this real quick so I can shine in here. I want to talk to sports.
Okay, well, we've got a story on Dan Deacon, the wonderful composer, the Pied Piper of music, electronic artist, and just really one of the leaders of Baltimore's underground music scene. He has now hit the mainstream. I mean, he's doing sound scores for Marvel films. And he's just this incredibly thoughtful, likable, cool guy who's like very invested in Baltimore. He's not going to leave Baltimore. So Lydia Williver, our other fantastic senior editor, she wrote about him, and he's just, he's inspiring, he's cool, he's a fascinating cat, so you want to read about him.
Do you remember the movie Night Shift with Michael Keaton?
Yeah, I do.
Do you remember when Michael Keaton would talk into his tape recorder?
Yeah.
What if we feed the tuna? What if we feed the tuna mayonnaise? That was a
million-dollar idea. Here it is. So I talk to my phone right now on my whisper flow, and I say, steal every guest from Baltimore Magazine, Dan Deacon, make sure you get him on. Make sure you get Max Loki up with the BSO Orchestra Duty, Jonathan, that he can't get a hold of because I can't find his email. And make sure you get Ron Cassie to get that really cool guest on, the Bon Vivant lady that was there from Baltimore.
Okay.
Is that good?
That's good. I mean,
all
those would all be
that's
great
how
guests.
That's my new production assistant, just so you saw my new AI there. I'm talking to my
So
son.
Next time we're going to talk
so
about your
AI
addiction.
She's so mad at me about AI. What is wrong with the ultra-liberal, progressive people who are reasonable about almost everything to be so unreasonable about the best technology that I've ever witnessed?
AI is not smart. AI steals other people's.
Because you ain't making it smart. My clone knows everything.
AI steals arts, music, ideas.
My clone knows whether I like Led Zeppelin more than Bruce Springsteen. It's insane.
Your clone is not a real, it's not a sentient being. You realize that, right?
I love my clone.
Oh, no. It's really creepy, by the way.
I know.
That you have a clone.
One day I will win a Best of Baltimore magazine award for having this conversation with you about how AI can be used.
Best avatar.
One day I will use AI to help Coco's finally get the coconut shrimp further up than
he's. See, he's already moved on from this win, and now he's campaigning for the next one. We knew it was inevitable.
Listen, I knew I was sunk for any more awards the day that I won this one.
Right. We'll see you in 25 years.
This raises the bar for you, by the way, just so you know, going forward.
I have to reinvent myself again?
No, the level, the guests, the shows, the work that you do, now the expectation's higher for you.
All people have to do to get on this show is say yes. It's a great Bodine song, by the way. Go look that one up. Ron Cassie is here. Max is here. Dave Shine is checking his phone. Like, I don't know. Are you okay? You nervous? I'm sorry I'm late. Are you okay?
No, I'm not nervous.
No, all right. He's wearing his Vandy hat. He's being cool and calm. And I'm here. We're having crab cakes. I had delicious creamy crab soup. Best in the city here. No lie. I had a Greek salad here with those crispy little red peppers and yellow and orange peppers. And I had, I had the coconut shrimp with the raspberry. It's so good. Coco's.
He gave me one. That's how you know he likes me.
I mean,
you're
if
precious.
I admit that I like you, then it's going to put a whole cramp on how I won Best of Baltimore. So we're going to be like the Smithereens song, Strangers When We Meet, when we get together now. It's like none of this happened anymore,
so I
can be eligible to win again.
I know how precious those butterfly shrimp are.
Everybody out there knows the fix is in, and I won you over with that Italian food last year.
I saw the Smithereens and Allen's by the way.
They kicked your ass, didn't
they?
They did.
Little bar.
Especially
little
for,
bar.
Yes, they did.
They were from Hoboken, New Jersey. And they just got on 120 minutes, the MTV show.
Can I tell a story? You got a minute? Can I tell a story? So Smithereens are my Stillwater to my almost famous, okay? So I rode on their bus. I partied with them. I was up late, stayed up all night long. Tatanizio. We shut the door. We locked the door at the Leadbetters one night. Eddie Lauer was there. We sang Beatles songs and Who songs all night long. We got ripped out of our mind. We came out. The sun was up. And we went down to the diner the diner in the Captain, the diner by your house.
Captain G.
No, yeah, but what's the Captain?
Sip and Bite.
Sip and Bite, thank you. Sip and Bite, thank you. So we went there afterwards. The Buttery was still open then. All right, so everybody knows the Buttery. So that, not that night, but around that time, 87, 88, 89, 90, around the 11 Green Thoughts era. I was very close with the band. I was the music critic at The Sun. I hung out with them. Mike Mazaris, the bass player, huge sports nerd, baseball guy. Jack McDowell was in his band, Stick Figure. Yeah. Jack McDowell was in the band with Mike Mazaris. So look it up. Blackjack. Yes, that guy. So anyway, Smithereens were playing at Johns Hopkins University at Shriver Hall. They were my guests at Bohagers. Imagine this, eating crabs. This is the real Bohagers, not the dome. This was the four walls. This was when the crabs were out on the deck. This is when the stage was in the corner. They had moved the bar down. And there was a band playing. It was a Thursday night. So we were playing on Friday night. It was just me, Mike, and Jimmy. Pat was doing whatever Pat was doing. And Dennis never came out and partied, the drummer. He wasn't that wet. So we were out eating crabs. And a guy comes over to the table. And he says, hey, you guys are in the Smithereens. We're the band that's playing tonight. You think you could get up and do a couple of songs? And Jimmy's like, up to here, we got beer. He's like, yeah, man, you know any Stones? And the kids are like, no. And he's like, and Mike's like, well, you know any Who? You know, play a Who song? And they're like, no. And this is the drummer in the band. And he's a listener. He's still in my life somehow in Bel Air. I don't really know him, but he's written to me. Because he witnessed it. One of the greatest nights of my life. Like, literally, we're talking about top 10, other than child being born and things like that. This was, when I tell you I did this, there were witnesses. So we're out there, and the dude says, well, I play drums. Can we do a Smithereens song? And the bass player and the guitar player are there, and now we got a drummer. And they're like, we don't have anybody to sing. I said, I'll sing. And Jimmy and I have played together a lot. Jimmy and I have sang songs together. He knew I could sing. And Jimmy's like, all right. And Mike had never heard me sing. Mike and I were the buds. And he's like, okay, let me clean up. 20 minutes, we'll come out. What songs are we doing? Drummer sat down. We did Behind the Wall of Sleep. We did A Girl Like You. And we did Blood and Roses. Because the drummer knew the songs. I'm with Mike and Jimmy, and I knew the words. And they knew I knew the words. They knew. Jimmy knew I could sing. Mike didn't know I could sing. We got up on stage, different equipment. Jimmy took the guitar. Mike comes over and the place is packed. It's 9:45 on a Thursday night, college night, packed. And I went, Mike came over to me. He says, you better be able to do this. Place went bat poop. And I did 3 songs with Smithereens on stage. That's not number one. It's number 2 or 3, but it's like, that really happened.
Now, is there documentation of this?
There are witnesses. I don't think there are any pictures.
No pictures or video.
It was 90...
Suspicious. Considering you've documented everything else.
I was going to say, this is like, if I'm writing the story, I would want to spread...
I have no picture of anybody... How about this? Yeah, I'm going to put a bounty on this, okay? I'm going to do crab cakes for a year. Be reasonable. Crab cake dinner for a year at Coco's on me. If anybody has any documentation. Is that a good bounty? Is that a fair bounty?
It's way too much money. Are you kidding? Have you seen the price of crab cakes?
I'm talking about a crab cake dinner.
Just one.
One dinner.
Okay, because you said all
for
year.
For a year.
Okay, for a second you said
I'm putting a real bounty on this. It's a $2,000 bounty.
Okay, all right. Let people heed your call.
If anybody has...
A photo, yeah, a video.
A photo, anything.
But you know, there was before iPhone.
It was before any
so
of them.
So you're
probably... Believe me, if any of this existed, I would have shared it.
I'll ask Dave. I think in the journalists, we need two people to collaborate.
I got to find a drummer.
Two sources.
That's right.
Right.
I know two girls that were there 100%.
Somebody in the band.
Oh, that's already happened. I had Jimmy on last year.
That's one.
And also that you were good. See, the fact that you were good is
well,
just
we would have stopped after the first song if I sucked. Believe me. They wouldn't have had any part of it if I didn't.
Cameron Crowe needs to call you.
I crushed it that night.
That's a good story.
And Beth Popper was there, whose dad was the longtime coach. She just lost her dad. Beth was there, and her friend, I'll leave it at. I know people that were there who witnessed it, because whenever I run into them, I'm like, I just want...
It's irritating him so much that we're doubting him.
No, it would be a top 10 moment for anybody. I'll acknowledge that.
Well, those are the kind of rock and roll stories I'm going to talk much more
about. Wow, okay.
I just told you one you didn't
know. Better than that. All right, I'm in.
The late, great Steve Cochran was there that night, because I kind of shocked him, too. After, I couldn't believe you were going to do it. It took a lot of balls to do that. And he was an old radio guy. You were Steve Cochran? Oh, Mix 106. Oh, Steve was a legend. He was running the Bowhager's time.
Okay.
Damien Bohager might have been there. I'll find him. All right. It's all brought to you by Friends of the Maryland Lottery. Storytelling, 28th anniversary. That's not even going to be in my top 20. It's going to be low in the stories because, like, I've talked to Paul McCartney. I've asked him questions. Do you know this? I've had lunch with Robert Plant. Do you know this?
No.
See, this is what, and you love music.
Yeah.
Gosh. All right. I'll tell some stories. All of it brought to you by friends at GBMC and Farnan and Dermot. We're at Coco's.
This is way
Dave's
better
coming
than
on.
Interview with Paul McCartney or Robert Plant. What? Be on stage, man, and you know, have that moment. It's cool than just sitting down with somebody.
I didn't tell you about the time I got on stage and Meatloaf and messed it up. He didn't let me on. I messed it up. That's another story.
Big enough to throw you off.
I got shot by the bass player. Boom. He brought me in to do the Phil Rizzuto part and told me I couldn't do it. And I could. And Meat, not right. Meat's like, you're not going to be able to do it. And he's like, you're not going to do it, but I'm going to have you come down. And I did. I spent the afternoon. Mark Messina was doing my show that day. And I called in. And I failed miserably. It was terrible. I could not
no
do
scripts,
the Rizzuto.
You have to do it by memory? That,
he would not. He wouldn't give me a prompt. He wouldn't give me a prompt.
That's a check. Only you would have the chutzpah to think that you could pull that off without a script.
The true story is I saw a guy do it. Now,
yeah.
at the 96 Super Bowl, first year the Ravens hadn't played a game yet. It was in Arizona, and I knew Meatloaf from my music critic days. And this is a tour bus story. He was playing in a parking lot at a Super Bowl party. He was back on the charts at that time. He was a star again with the second bat out of hell. And I knew him, and he came back to the tour bus, and on that show, there was a radio guy, a rock guy, not a sports guy, but a rock guy, who had Meatloaf on the show promoting it and told Meatloaf that he wanted to do it. Meat said, come down. He rehearsed, he nailed it. And I saw the show where this guy nailed it. This guy nailed it, and he nailed it. And I'm like, I want to do that. And I saw Meat, I was with Meat on his tour bus afterwards, said, tell me the story about that guy doing it. He said, you can't do that. And I'm like, well, I'd try. He's like, I'd let you try, but you can't do it. And he's like, I've never, like, that's amazing that guy could do that. No one's ever been able to do that. I let him do it. He was unbelievable. He said, I'll let you do it if you can do it. We'll make it shtick. I'll come on your show. Like, that's how Meat was. And we made it shtick, and I came on, and I went there, and it was embarrassing. I'm on the stage at Meriwether doing sound check, and everyone in the band's looking at me like, so there's the other side. I want to crawl under the table telling that story.
This lends more credibility to the Smithereens story.
I didn't have
story.
To sing. I had to remember a script.
Yeah. Right. That's exactly.
Yeah.
Did you do the Phil Rizzuto voice? Do you have a voice?
I was just trying to remember the damn words.
Yeah,
just,
yeah.
No, he's safe. It's like, oh, wait a minute. He's making... Like, that was a really hard thing to do.
So I grew up listening to Phil Rizzuto and Bill White on WPIX. I don't think I could do it.
You can't do it.
I never tried, but I'm very...
It's very difficult to do.
Phil Rizzuto's play-by-play.
I'll tell Shannon about the time I nailed it with Mike Peters and the alarm, which is probably my number one. Dave's coming on. Ron is leaving. I've lost my... They've already rescinded my award. They've already ripped the page out of the magazine. So thank you. It means a lot to me.
Correction is coming.
It means a lot to me, and it does. And you damn near made me cry. And I, you know, so thank you. You made me think a lot, and I appreciate that.
Something AI can't do.
I'll have you back on for Oscars, and I'll have you back on when the Orioles win a World. I'll have you back on sometime soon. We'll go to the art gallery and do that together. Day Shine is coming next. We're back for more with Coco's. And it's because it's fun. It's my anniversary, and I want to take the week off.